Well, South Africa is abuzz. The red carpets are being dusted off and Durban's hotels will be bursting at the seams because, yes, the BRICS are coming. Putin's a BRIC, he's coming, the new Chinese president and his singing wife are BRICS and they're coming. The BRICS being, of course, Brazil, Russia, India, China. And now since 2010, South Africa. So the BRIC has become a plural. They're emerging economies and they're very keen to do business with the African continent. Already are, of course, but there's always scope for more. And this is the first of the annual BRIC summits to be held in South Africa. The summit proper kicks off next week and signifies, South Africa hopes, a whole new future for their country. But not everyone is thrilled. Civil society groups, the NGOs, are urging caution about who trades with who and at whose expense. They're running a BRICS from below counter summit. Bobby Peake is the director of Groundwork, Friends of the Earth in South Africa, which is a co-organizer of the BRICS from below summit. And Abdullah Varachia is a co-director and founder of Frontier Advisory. That's a firm which provides strategy advice for emerging markets, and I welcome them both to our little program. Bobby, kick off by giving us your take on the BRICS, because it's a grouping that's probably been celebrated mostly so far, but you see it as presenting new dangers.
Yeah, good evening, and thank you for having us on this evening. I think the reality of the BRICS is that it is a grouping of countries that are seeking to be able to challenge the dominant world order and to be able to, as they often say, deal in the world to be able to alleviate the great poverty that we have in the South and in places like Russia, India, China, and South Africa. But the reality we face is that they're not prepared to change the rules that have been causing the poverty. So instead of challenging and finding alternative ways of doing things, in alternative economies, alternative development paradigms, what they are saying is, yes, we're a different bloc, but we'll be playing in the same Washington consensus processes, in the same type of extractive economies that take wealth out of Africa, and that causes, what we have presently today, this ever danger of climate change coming at us. All of that stays the same, but we're going to be different. So we find that is not the appropriate way to go. The fact that they're there is important. There needs to be a change in world order to get away from the dominance of the U.S., Europe, and Japan with those very extractive economies. But we can't have this replaced with another scramble for Africa and the cutting up for Africa on behalf of BRICS countries. So that's why we and civil society from China, Brazil, India, and Russia, who are in Durban with Africans and with South Africans over the next 4 or 5 days around our council summit, we are going to be raising these questions, and we're going to be the watchdog of what is happening here at BRICS.
The ironies here, Bobby, are profound because, of course, BRICS favour an anti-imperialist rhetoric. These guys were the underdogs, or, often quite recently. And all of a sudden, you detect a sort of neo-colonialism.
Yeah, I think that is sad, isn't it? The reality is that you look at it and you say, but, weren't these the main countries, in the last decades, challenging the dominant world order for change? The reality is that they're challenging it for a change, but they're not changing. They're keeping the same game. And that game in the past was extraction and impoverishing the South. And the reality is this is the same situation. We are going to be extracting wealth from Africa rather than developing mechanisms that seeks to build Africa internally.
Well, before I go to Abdullah, I'd like you, Bobby, to tell us about Mozambique, because this, I think, is a very significant case in point.
Yeah, I mean, we work with the Mozambicans and we've done research there over the last couple of months. And the key thing is that you're having the BRICS countries deeply embedded in taking wealth out of Mozambique. One is the South African government, just taking gas out of Mozambique. With the Chinese government, they're looking at re-damming and developing new dams on the Zambezi for electricity for South Africa. We're having Indian companies like Jindal exploiting the coal reserves and wanting to build power stations there. And we're having Brazil, the Vale Corporation from Brazil, extracting coal out of the Tet province. All of this stuff is getting sucked out of Mozambique, going east to China, going to Brazil and India, and also to places like, you know, Australia and Europe. But none of it is happening in Mozambique. And the example that I always use, if you look at the Mozal, and the Australians will know this, BHP Billiton, that is headquartered out in Australia, they have a plant there in Maputo that particular aluminium smelter uses more electricity than the entire Mozambique put together.
Yeah.
So that's the type of development that's going down, which we obviously cannot agree with.
Abdullah Varachia, BRICS could be a force for good, could it not?
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you start looking at the impact of the BRIC economies in the last 10 years in Africa, in various economies in Africa, the impact has been sizable and significant. And I'll give you a few examples that reflect the impact and the developmental impact even if of BRICS investment coming into Africa. The World Bank speaks to the fact that in the next 10 years, Africa will need infrastructure to the tune of $85 to $95 billion every year for the next 10 years. And China last year contributed more than half of that infrastructure spend. So China has become a very key economic actor in terms of rolling out infrastructure developments on the continent. And we all know what the concomitant implications of infrastructure rollout, infrastructure growth in an economy is. It enables the economy. It provides an opportunity for a movement of goods and services. It provides an opportunity for increased trade. It enhances the small business sector in the economy. So that's one. I mean, two, if you look at India and you look at the significant influence of the Indian economy, one example being the pharmaceutical sector. Five of the leading Indian pharmaceutical companies are operating, one here in South Africa and also in a number of other African countries. And the impact of those pharmaceutical companies coming in has been a significant reduction in terms of the cost of medication, the cost of antiretrovirals, the cost of generic medication to people in poor communities. Certainly, and this is where I have a few concerns. I don't think there's a discussion and a discourse of us against them. There's no such discussion because we must be realistic that all five BRICS economies plus Mexico are part of the expanded G13. So they sit on exactly the same table as the U.S. and some other countries in terms of discussing global economic issues, and they're also part of the expanded G20. And so I don't think it's really a discussion of an us versus them. It's more about how the BRICS, as countries of the South, collaborate more closer together in terms of political and economic ties. And I think the BRICS have made a significant impact on Africa.
Bobby, I'm going to ask a naive question. Here we have Brazil, Russia, India, and China, massively powerful states. And here we have South Africa, nothing like in the same league. Why were they invited in?
Well, you know, I think it's important to just consider the stats given by Abdullah. The reality is that Africa is seen as this major market, this major continent that you could invest in and get great wealth out of. So when we look at the infrastructure development that China is putting so much money into, big dams, major ports, major railway lines, that is not to service the poor Africans that are living in dusty, small towns around Africa, but it's rather an infrastructure that seeks to take out, rail across Africa, put on a ship, and get off Africa. So that is the infrastructure bill that we're looking at. The important thing with South Africa is that South Africa is the gateway to Africa. And you know, our ministers in our government, Jeff Adebe, and all of that, they all agree that our country opens up for global corporations, for countries globally, the gateway into Africa. We have financial institutions, we have mining institutions, etc., that once you got your foot here, you can get into Africa. And that's why South Africa was brought on board. Our growth rate, our financial reserves, our GDP are nowhere near the four other countries. So it is just a way of being able to facilitate the inroads into Africa and extract.
Abdullah, you provide strategy advice to corporations, indeed to governments. What sort of things do you tell them? Can you give us any examples of some you've worked with and what worked and what didn't?
Sure, I think there are a few examples. And one of the key issues that constantly come up in this discussion is the issue of extractive industries. And I think a component of extractive industries and a key component thereof is this concept of beneficiation. And African policymakers have had beneficiation in policy books for a number of years. Since the 90s, we've spoken about beneficiation. And beneficiation, actually moves and really transforms goods from its raw form to a finished product, and obviously it has much more value. And when we start looking at the concept of beneficiation, we've seen a number of initiatives to be able to create the requisite enabling environment to beneficiate products. One example, India polishes 93% of all of the diamonds in the world. They've got a phenomenal diamond polishing training industry and a diamond polishing industry that has a global supply chain. One of the initiatives that was discussed at the recent India-Africa Summit 2 years ago was to put up a diamond polishing center in Namibia, a diamond polishing center in Angola. And as a result, we'll start seeing diamonds being beneficiated and polished in the home country. That's as a result of an initiative with the Indian government. Secondly, I beg to differ in terms of the concept that infrastructure is largely around getting the product out to ports. You go to Ghana and you see the massive infrastructure from a road perspective and the impact it's had. And I spent a huge amount of time in the African continent. The impact it's had from a traffic perspective, from the ability from businesses to move goods and services around, and that's been as a result of Chinese investment in infrastructure. We spoke about Mozambique early on, and Mozambique is a classic example where the Chinese government was key and critical in terms of the building of the new airport in Mozambique. So I think, yes, there are concerns in terms of modalities of investment, and those are concerns across every country in the world. Every country needs to manage international investment coming in. It's the responsibility of individual countries, whether it's the US, whether it's Finland, whether it's Australia, or Ghana, or South Africa, to be able to say, these are the rules of engagement. And South Africa is a classic example. South Africa's got legislation in terms of local ownership policies around black economic empowerment. And international investors, regardless of where they come from, adhere to those policies of black economic empowerment because they're part of the legislation.
Bobby Peake, tell us about your alternative summit. What are the BRICS from below? Who's attending? And what do you expect to achieve?
Well, we have a group of organizations from around the world focused on the Global South out of Thailand, Mayas Democracy out of Brazil, local organizations from Cape Town, from Mozambique, that will all be around. And I think for us, the critical thing is to be able to start understanding BRICS so that we can recognize that there's a lot at stake, and we need to scrutinize the claims that our politicians are making, and we need to scrutinize the processes that come out of BRICS so that they are talking left and they're walking left. Because as we have our politicians now, there's a famous saying in South Africa that you will be very fiery, you will talk left, but in the way you will act like any very right-wing, Washington-based person. And government. So it's been able to understand that, and we are wanting to build this network of organizations that are ground-based. These are not big NGOs like the Oxfams and the ActionAids of the world. These are small NGOs, community-based organizations in rural areas that are coming together and to develop an awareness of this, because this is, you have to agree, this is the tomorrow of the world, BRICS. And we're going to have to develop a strong and very acute criticism and well-informed criticism so that it is what we want it to be.
So, Bobby, you're not simply throwing bricks at BRICS, for a bad pun. You're trying to engage them in a creative dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, we are there. We invited our Minister of International Relations, Ms. Mayata Mshabane, to come and address us. Unfortunately, she can't, but she will address the business people. I mean, this is what frustrates me as the director of Friends of the Earth. You ask, you try to engage with power, but they won't engage with society, but, you know, government will engage with big business, and they have done that over the last couple of weeks. And what we are saying is, how do you start engaging people on the ground? Because this ain't about heads of states meeting in rooms. This is about how does Chinese investment, how does Indian investment go down in rural parts of Africa so that it's beneficial to the Africans living in those areas? And that's what we want to get out of BRICS.
Abdullah, you advise the not-for-profit sector as well as the private sector, don't you? So what do you see as the potential for relationships in the not-for-profit sector, both within the BRICS countries and between them?
Well, I think three things. The first one is I think it's very important to be able to have an engagement of civil society, because civil society has such a fundamental role to play in terms of a multilateral forum like the BRICS, like the G13 and so many others. And so I think a formation of civil society and an engagement is very important to be able to address some of the critical issues that span an array of sectors. And that's important, and I think it's welcome that there is a grouping of civil society meeting next week. And I think it makes a massive difference in terms of ensuring that the discussion and accountability is had. I think secondly, and I'm going to give you two practical examples. India recently, about a year and a half ago, rolled out a million laptops that were partly financed by the government to the cost of $35 per laptop. It's innovation, Indian innovation at the base of the pyramid. I believe that inventions or innovations like that, that service communities at the base of the pyramid, communities that are often not serviced by traditional business, will go a long way. I can already understand, and if I think through what the impact of a $35 laptop will do in the education system, not only here in South Africa, but so many other economies in Africa, it will have a fundamental change.
It'd go pretty well in Australia, Abdullah, I've got to tell you. it's not a bad program. Now, Bobby, you and your civil society colleagues, as well as your alternative summit, will be providing a monitoring role of what happens at the main summit, will you not?
Well, I mean, that is the interesting thing, and we've been frustrated by this, because we have had very little information on what happens in this main summit. We know that big business will be there, they're invited, they're sitting on the table, but we don't know what the agenda is on the inside. So it's going to be very difficult to try and monitor. So the only way we can monitor is by understanding what comes out in the media and what comes out, obviously, in the public domain on websites, and to be able then at that level articulate a difference and put pressure on. Now, the important thing is not to open up BRICS when you have these big meetings. I think that is just playing into big NGOs flying around the world, and that's an absolute waste of time. What we need to do is open up these BRICS debates year in and year out in the countries to say, this is what we're going to be doing at BRICS as government. What do you want? What do you see? This $35 laptop, you know, example is a classic. How do you bring that stuff into Africa in a meaningful way? And you're not going to do that by sitting only with business at the table. But it also doesn't happen only sitting once a year at the table. It has to be a democracy that is built throughout the year through in government's debates about their planning.
Abdullah, I hear that a new BRICS bank is to be launched at the summit. Why? What's its purpose? And how big a bank?
Well, I think the concept of this BRICS Development Bank was conceptualized and designed or proposed by the five heads of state in Delhi 2012 when the last BRICS summit took place. And coming out of that was a directive issued to all five finance ministers from China, India, Brazil, Russia, and South Africa to go out and to independently create technical task teams to look at the applicability, to look at the technical makeup of the possibility of creating a BRICS Development Bank. They were then also asked to report back at the BRICS Summit in March on the 26th and 27th. What's already happened is the finance ministers have met on the sidelines of the G13. They met in January in South Africa. And so I think we'll see, a significant amount announcement on the 27th next week. One, in terms of the capitalization of this BRICS Development Bank, two in terms of the mechanization and the type of projects that the Development Bank will focus on, and three, some detail in terms of the makeup and the headquarters and where it will be structured and how it will be structured. The possibility is, and I think there's a strong possibility that we'll see an initial capitalization of $10 billion by each one of the five countries, so that there's equilibrium in terms of that initial capitalization of the bank. And development banks play an influential role in terms of financing of key projects in infrastructure, in health, in education. If you look at 2009, 2010, China Development Bank and China Export-Import Bank financed projects to the tune of $110 billion. That's significant when you look at the role of development finance institutions. And the hope is that this BRICS Bank will really start to identify key development opportunities and start financing them. Is it a countermeasure to the World Bank and IMF? No, I don't think so. I think it's just an enhancement, and it provides an added opportunity for development finance to be.
But Bobby, are you skeptical about the bank? Do you see these this interesting variety of currencies intermingling creatively?
Well, I think there are two things. If you look at currencies, you have to agree that being able to bring the trade between the five countries on the currencies that the five R's that we have, the ruble, the rand. And the other three are
the real.
Yeah. If you get those five together, you can cut out the dominance of the dollar and the euro. And I think that's significant, and we need to think of how we do that. So it's a direct transaction. The reality around these major international financial institutions, I mean, they've just been disastrous. And I don't see any way that this new BRICS Bank is going to be anything different. I mean, they've, in terms of the World Bank, you know, it's been pushed to get out of fossil fuels. It said it should, and it didn't. It's now stopped its energy review process because it's too radical, because it's also going to push it out of fossil. So the BRICS Bank, what it most probably will end up doing, is supporting a lot of this type of fossil fuel extraction that is so dangerous, not only for Africa, but for us as the world in terms of climate change. But also together with this is that, you know, the type of lending that is going to be taking place is a lending that is going to be very difficult to monitor as to is there human rights issues involved there and how do you then challenge that lending in terms of those human rights issues. We know the World Bank has got an atrocious record of funding where human rights issues are involved, and I don't see this BRICS Bank being any different. So I'm not holding my breath and saying that this is going to be a good thing. I think that
gentlemen, I've got to wind you up, and I thank you very much for participating. Bobby Peake, Director of Groundwork, Friends of the Earth in South Africa, which is a co-organizer of the BRICS From Below Summit. And thank you, Abdullah Viracia, co-director and founder of Frontier Advisory, a firm which, as you heard, provides strategy advice for many of the players in emerging markets. Thank you, Abdullah. That's it for this week on Late Night Live, and I'd like to express my profound gratitude to the team. Good on you, Paul Gough on controls, exec producer Gail Basaria, Anne Arnold, Muda Tadias, and Christine Short. Stay tuned to Radio National for the news, and we'll be back with you next week.